Welcome back to Switchcast. Tonight, we are not here live, but we appreciate you being here. And in celebration of me not being here, we're going to show you the best of the last few years of Switchcast. That's right, we went back through some of our favorite guests, although they were all wonderful, and some of our favorite moments from Switchcast, and put together a highlight reel for you all. So again, I know you're maybe disappointed that you can't ask your questions tonight, and we're certainly disappointed as well, but unfortunately, I will not be in the country this week. It is not because I am fleeing from the law or anything. Don't worry, I will be back next week and we'll be here live, but we wanted to put together our favorite moments for you. So sit back, grab a cold beer, make some popcorn, and feel free to comment away and throw your questions in anyway, and we'll do our best to respond to them next week when we're back here live. So we thank you for all of your support. We enjoy your viewership, and we're glad you are enjoying the podcast.
Probably my favorite VinWiki car, and it was around and known before VinWiki, but it's chronicled now in VinWiki, is the Dead Rapper Murcielago, which, if you haven't seen it, there's this newspaper clipping of this rapper who was, a legitimate dead businessman, but he was shot, and he was at his open casket funeral. It was an open door funeral, and so there's one photo of that, and it has made the rounds of dealers and individuals, and the black and red interior has been changed out to black to somewhat erase the history and or the smell of formaldehyde. But, you know, there's a definite value detraction for that car because of that. Not all of the, I think the current owner has no idea that he has the Dead Rapper Murcielago.
Well, he could if he checked VinWiki. But really, it was never advertised as that. And so someone put the pieces together and documented that on VinWiki. And I'll be honest, that car is worth 20% more than an average 03 Mercy today.
To you.
To anybody.
amongst
imperfect cars. I'm not saying that it is absolute. But if you were looking at the bottom third of 03 Mercies, which it certainly is within, you know, non-original interior cars, things like that, yes, it's worth more. Would you rather own the Dead Rapper car or a normal one?
Well, but you make money off of telling stories.
No, so, I make money off selling the cars that are way more interesting to other people that want to tell the stories at Cars and Coffee. If you pull up in the car and like, oh, that's a really pretty Mercy. Guess what? A dead guy at his funeral in it. How cool is that? I mean, people love that stuff.
I wonder if you could get the original newspaper clipping for that.
You don't have to. Google it. Dead Rapper Mercy.
No, but to like put it on your friggin' windshield.
I'd wrap it in that, just tiled over. I mean, like, absolutely. I mean, the first thing I would do is put the interior back to original and get a stuffed version of that guy to put in that Cars and Coffee. Absolutely. I mean, he would ride with me in the HOV lane. I mean, the whole time.
It's the new, like, people are getting desperate for attention at Cars and Coffee now because paint to sample has become ubiquitous. So it's like, well, what do I do? Ed, you've created an entire new market for weird story cars. That it's the new
we need to
it's
find
the new flex.
That's it.
that car was up for auction on Double Clutch, the wholesale website. I sent it to you. It was like 6 months ago or a year ago. I mean, it wasn't super recent, but the guy wanted all the money. It's in Ohio.
He knows what he's got.
Based on what he paid for it. I don't know if he did, but yeah,
it's in Ohio.
It is. Yeah, it is in Ohio. So
yeah. There are these people that make really realistic looking dolls, and I'm sure they could do the rapper.
I don't know those people, but I'm sure you do. Yeah. I don't want to ask why you know those people.
I just know they exist.
Do you also have their W-9?
Nope. No, they're not a sponsor. They're not a sponsor.
I said W-9. Their W-9. How much have you paid to them? I didn't say $10.99.
He's not an accountant. Don't think this is advice.
I didn't give advice. I'm asking you questions.
about the responsibility of my purchases. Is that it?
For some of you watching, our last episode was live from California at the Portofino Hotel, which is the traditional finish line of the original Cannonball Run and what we use now as well as the finish line for our runs. And we did a musket ball, which was limited to 100 horsepower at the wheels. We all met in Darien, Connecticut and had to dyno our cars. And if we were over 100 horsepower, we had insignificant penalty. Well, some depends. Extra weight.
There was some,
maybe a live lobster, had to do a puzzle overnight, things like that. So Steve was well within the rules of 100 horsepower.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What did you take on this run?
On that run, I bought a 1997 Saturn SL2. So it's the basic four-door.
Plastic racer.
Oh, yeah. The dent-resistant panels from our top scientist. Yep. So, yeah, that was, it was actually a fun car. The problem was with it, it doesn't have overdrive because it's an automatic. Yeah. And so I had picked it because it had cruise control.
Four speed?
Yeah, it's a 4-speed automatic.
Oh, gosh.
In those cars. And so, you know, it's like any other competitive event. You know, I'm thinking I've solved the puzzle. I've figured this out. The Saturns, you know, they're you can't kill them. So I'm like, this thing can really make it. And then, of course, when I see what everyone else brought, the Saturn was way, you know, undermatched compared to these other cars.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us, we got to talk to you for like 4.25 minutes, which is about the time that takes Arnie and I to fill up 60 gallons of fuel.
Yeah.
We got to talk to you briefly about your experience on the musket ball. Mm-hmm. And of course, the most notable experience being your time airborne. Tell us a little more about your experience.
Yeah, that was really unexpected, as any airborne incident with the vehicle is. But so the quirky thing is that it's this glorious shade of 1990s kind of tealish seafoam green car. And so for our team name for John Ficarra, it was called the Flying Pistachio. So that was the solo team name for this car. Little did I know it would become accurate. And so we're going across the U.S. I get to Oklahoma and I've got to make a fuel stop, and we're on the tollway, and there's those Oasis, you know, gas stations like we've got up here in Chicago and on the turnpike here. And so it was kind of an unexpected fuel stop because I was chasing some guys in a TDI Jetta, and it was actually Wesley who I chased in the Southern Classic. And so I just had the Saturn pegged across the tollway in the middle of the night.
So this is not a leisurely drive.
No, it was spirited,
spirited.
Know, within the confines of a 1997 Saturn automatic.
But if you get ahead of him, you gain a position.
Yes.
It is racing on public highways, allegedly.
Allegedly, yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know, it is a competition to see who can get there first. And so, you know, the little car ran like a train. But, of course, I just had it pegged across that part of the country. So I was burning gas faster than I expected. And that car, it had a 20-gallon cell in the trunk, so I could refuel it by myself in less than 5 minutes. And so I was like, no big deal. I've just got to make a fifth stop. You know, I'll just take care of that here in Oklahoma. Got to make an unexpected stop and see the sign for the Oasis, start to pull off. It was one of those left-hand exits. And pitch black, you know, where the exit is, but you could see the bright white lights of the gas station in the middle of the turnpike. And so I get off the exit, and I've actually had to go back onto Google Maps and look at this to understand what really happened. And it makes sense if you look at that satellite view of the Oasis. And so basically I come off on the left exit. I overshoot the car entrance, you know, because I just didn't see it. And so I end up on the truck side of this gas station. But I know I've got to get, you know, further in to of course, get to the gas. And so there's this line of like 40 trucks that I've got to go past and then figure out how to weave around. And I wasn't going unreasonably fast. I was going faster than you normally would in a parking lot, because it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm just trying to scoot through and make a quick pit stop. So I get past
this
road.
There's no speed limits on off-ramps.
No, yeah, I didn't, you know, it wasn't posted. Right. So make it past this row of trucks. I get to the last trailer that I can see. It's a flatbed, so I can see that there's no buildings or anything in front of it. And I just whip the wheel to the left, and unbeknownst to me, there's this concrete island that's there to separate traffic out of the truck area. And just instantaneously, just this loud bang. And things started to float up in the car from the seats. Things start flying through the air. I knew that the front wheels had come off the ground because it was kind of a full moon that night. And all of a sudden, the moon is in the windshield. It's not supposed to be there, right? The moon was above me in Texas. And so, pow, the car just comes up. I feel the front wheels come off. Gatorade bottles and whatnot are flying around in the cabin.
Hopefully you had your cap on your pee bottle, right?
Yeah. No, there was no risk of that. I was good. I was good. And so, you know, it kind of makes this pop, goes up in the air. Then I feel the front wheel slam down. And then almost instantaneously, I had cleared the concrete island. And so the front wheels drop off and I just hear the frame drag across the island. And then right after that, I went right to the gas pumps where I was supposed to go.
And just so, sliding in. Like
just kind of slide in.
Dale Earnhardt style.
Yeah, there it is. And so I kind of popped out, did a little ta-da. And luckily there was no one around. Like I said, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
I planned that.
Yeah. Completely went as planned. And so I hop out and the car didn't shut off. So, you know, the engine was still running. Shut the car off, pop the trunk, dump fuel in it, pop the hood, looked in the engine bay, checked the oil. Everything in the engine bay was where it was supposed to be. And I walked around the car. None of the tires were flat. I think what really saved the front end of the car is because it was a 4-speed, I ran taller tires to lower the RPMs on the highway. So I think that's what saved the front bumper, because now look, the front bumper's there. Everything's fine. I just did kind of a quick glance under the car. I didn't see anything hanging off the bottom of it. So finish the fuel stop, start the car. It starts back up. The headlights come back on. Start to ease out of the parking lot, turn the steering wheel. There's no noises, nothing's grinding. Get onto the entrance ramp, actually take my hands off the steering wheel, and the car's tracking straight. So somehow a miracle in my mind has happened that, you know, I didn't completely trash the car in Oklahoma. So then I take off back onto the interstate and run about another 800 miles. And that's when I got to Kingman, Arizona. And what I didn't know had happened to the car is, if you're familiar with the Saturns at all, they have that front stabilizer bar that goes around the front. It bolts to the frame and then actually goes into the control arms with some bushings. I had sheared the bolts off of the stabilizer bar.
It's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then actually cracked the threaded end where it goes into the control arm. Well, as some kind of miracle, I ran 800 miles further at the top end of a 97 Saturn's performance.
Which is like 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, you know, downhill. Yeah, it was pretty quick. And cross Flagstaff, and end up for making a last fuel stop in Kingman, Arizona. Stopped, same thing, fueled the car, checked it out. Got back into traffic on the interstate, brushed the brakes, and everything broke loose on the driver's side. Finally, the control arm had just, the control bar had just, or the stabilizer bar had just snapped, and everything came apart, and the car just was not drivable. You know, as I got to the second Kingman exit, and I pulled it off and had to figure out what I was going to do from there.
So what did you do?
So,
because in Cannonball, you can never give up.
No, that's right. That's right. So it was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon and things are just starting to shut down. And so the first thing I did is got on my phone, found a repair shop because I knew the car wasn't going to get fixed today. Like I could see the parts hanging off the bottom. I'm like, that's not going to be a roadside fix. So I found
You're Bradley.
Yeah, right. Unless you're Bradley, who can absolutely take care of that. But found a repair shop. Guy said, yeah, I'll take a look at it tomorrow. Found a tow truck. Got him coming. Then I knew I needed to get to LA because, you know, we're 5 hours out of LA now. And I knew that we were going to have some events and some, you know, celebrations, but I knew the car wasn't going to make it that day, honestly, or tomorrow. So got the tow truck coming, got the car sent over to the shop. And then I was looking for a rental car. So Enterprise was the only thing listed in town. Called them. Guy says, look, I don't have any cars. You know, we're getting ready to close. So I asked him, does anybody rent a car in this town? And he goes, well, yeah, there's this, you know, used car lot. It's kind of like this buy here, pay here place. And he said, you know, she'll rent cars sometimes. You can give her a call. And so I'll pull it up on Google. They will
do anything.
Yeah. I think they would actually transact in any way you wanted to. And so.
Well, the probably your rental. How long did you have the car? 2 days?
2 days.
So yeah. That's probably, you know, about as long as some of their average customers, you know.
Probably.
Before they get repoed.
Probably before some of the sales come back. So luckily they were open until six, and this lovely young lady answers the phone, tell her my situation. I was like, look, I have to get to Los Angeles tonight. Can you help me? And she goes, sure, I'll rent you a car. Now, we didn't specify what car was going to be rented. She just said, I will get you a car to Los Angeles. So I catch a cab, takes me to this lot, you know, show up, and she's pulling up like a rental contract on Word, show her a picture of my insurance card on my phone. And she goes, yep, got a car for you. She mentioned the price. I think it was like, you know, $100 and some change a day. I didn't care at that point. It was sure. Like, just get me in the car.
Yeah, because yeah. At this point, we're still racing. This is what people need to understand. Even yeah. If you break,
yeah,
it, the race is not over. Because
that's right.
Especially in a 100 horsepower race, yeah. A lot of other people have broken. So you want to be the first of the broken
yes,
people.
Yes. Like we're carrying apps that are showing us all the dots going across the country. And
yeah.
Even though I had no chance of winning, I was a solid mid-pack car mm-hmm. at this point. So to your point, like I've got to go.
Yeah. The first of the losers.
Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, she kind of, we get this contract settled out and she slides these keys over and it's a Nissan Altima. Which I saw Nissan. Okay. I thought, that's okay.
Hold on. Yeah. I got to stop you. I didn't think of this earlier, but somebody sent me, this is going to be totally lost because unless you see the montage, it doesn't make a difference. But somebody sent me like 2 days ago, this Instagram montage of Nissan Altimas and all the things you can do in Nissan Altimas. And it was all these crazy police chases and like car wrecks where people wrecked in an Altima and then just kept driving. And it was just saying like how amazing the Nissan Altima was. In this incredibly weird ghetto way, because yeah. There's all these police chases where they get out of, you know, you got three Tahoes surrounding them and the Altima just goes right through. So it's funny that you contributed to that.
I promise you, this Altima had been in one of those videos. this car had been chased by the police at some point. And which again, I was, you know, thankful for whatever I could get, but you know, I get in it and the seats are all kind of jacked up and you know, it's got 97,000 miles on it. Really bad vibration in the front, kind of smells like hot pockets and regret on the inside. You know, there's some stains going on inside. It had no gas in it. And, you know,
Monica Lewinsky was in the car.
The car had a story that I was interested in on that night. And so take off, get going and make it to Los Angeles about 10:30 that evening. And I think I came in only about like 10 minutes or so before you guys did.
Well, so I'm looking at my notes and it says that you finished in 39 hours and 37 mm-hmm. minutes, which yeah. I thought that was our exact time. I don't remember because it wasn't first, so it becomes a blur.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember pulling in, taking a picture, and maybe we didn't notice a dilapidated Nissan Altima flying in behind us.
You probably wouldn't notice it.
We finished at the same time.
Because I got in, we took pictures and I parked the car because security came over and wanted us to move it. And I parked it when I walked back to the guard shack and the sign you guys were coming in. So it was within minutes. And actually, because we didn't really post official times, I had to find a calculator on the internet to figure out start time for that. So, but I got there
I think
right
it's interesting just because. Like, we all started in Connecticut at the mm-hmm. same time. We did a Lamar-style start, which was the dumbest and most amazing thing ever.
Yeah.
25 people running to their turds yeah. and then peeling out of there.
Yeah.
The worst driving we ever did was in the first quarter of a mile.
Yeah, yeah.
And 2,800 miles later, breakdowns, rental cars, all this drama, you know, we were broken down for 8 hours, and we finished within minutes of each other.
Yeah,
I think that's super cool.
But I'll tell you the thing. I mean, it shows how strong of a car that you guys had because I calculate I lost 2.5 to 3 hours mm-hmm. of downtime, and then just came in just ahead of you. I mean, so you guys had a pretty powerful run going, you know, if you hadn't had mechanical
trouble. We were down 7-8 hours, but that's the cool thing about cannonballing, because if the delays hadn't happened to the lead, I mean, there some guys went northern route, some guys went southern route. If the big delays hadn't happened, it would have been a photo finish. Like, we would have all came together in Barstow, and there would have been like four people racing for the photo finish.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And I'll tell you the coolest thing about it and about that community. I remember when I kind of decided, okay, I can't fix the car on the side of the road. I sent a message in that app that we were using, you know, just said, look, I'm down, you know, because people would see the dots not moving. And immediately, you know, there was responses from other teams. And again, immediately, Jared Pink and the short bus team, they were kind of collecting people as needed that were down. It was immediate. Do you need a ride? Where are you? We will come get you. Do you need help? And these people were carrying tools and ready to do whatever.
Yep.
And that's actually, you know, we talk a lot about competition and it's a race. But, you know, it was just that community of people that were ready to help at a moment's notice. Yeah. You know, it was really
spirit of cannonball.
Yeah, across the country journey, and we were all there to help each other.
Unless you're in first, then you ain't stopping.
It, then, anyway. Yeah, you're on your own.
Celebrity Machines is a proud sponsor of Switchcast. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they appeared in movies and TV shows like Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. If you're looking for a gift for somebody you like or for garage art for your own place, check out celebritymachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST for a 25.39% discount at checkout. Again, go to celebritymachines.com and use discount code SWITCHCAST. Man hospitalized after mistaking NOS octane booster racing formula for energy drink.
It's pronounced NOS, bro.
No. NOS. No, this did not happen.
It did happen.
No.
It Can did. I love the like sub headline of the article you sent me. He did not receive the horsepower boost promised by the packaging.
Oh, who wrote that?
Oh, there's some great lines in here.
Oh,
I want to know, did he really mistake it, or was he thinking like, oh, maybe this will be like the purple pill in liquid form? And he just couldn't admit it, so he said, oops. Yeah, he drank a big bottle of this, not just a sip, believing it to be an energy drink. The 54-year-old man showed up at the ER after experiencing seizures and a state of agitation. Well, that happens to me with an energy drink, too. I get extremely agitated. His girlfriend brought the empty bottle and reported that he drank the product, believing it to be an energy drink. This doesn't add up. 54-year-old dude with a girlfriend chugs this thing, doesn't realize that it's not an energy drink until he starts having seizures.
I mean, to be fair, energy drinks taste like garbage anyway, so I don't know what you'd expect if you didn't know any better.
I guess. I don't know. I can't drink them either way, but
these bottles do look eerily similar.
Well, they do.
I'll give them that.
Yes. Yeah.
You can
gotta throw them a bone.
Put them in your Eclipse and cause some danger to manifold.
Oh man,
poor guy. That's terrible.
I mean, don't knock it unless you try it.
Reading this article too, like some of the side effects are terrifying. Like Parkinsonian symptoms due to oxidative damage in the mitochondria of the basal ganglia. I don't know what half of that was, but it sounds terrifying. One of those is the powerhouse of the cell. That's all I know.
Yeah. Manganese poisoning, pulmonary toxicity, renal and hepatic toxicity.
I don't like that word renal.
Yeah, that's not a fan.
I don't know what it means.
But it's using farming vehicles for its anti-knock properties. Anyway, don't try this at home. Shill bidding on Bring a Trailer, P Car Market, any auction is totally against their rules. And I think it's
bad anyway. Like, why would you do that? Right? Let the auction play out. I'm going to slightly implicate myself in this, but I'm not, because we had no participation in it, but haters are going to hate anyway. We have a Mercedes G63 for sale. It is currently for sale on our website, even though it sold 3 weeks ago on Bring a Trailer. How would that be? Well, we put it on Bring a Trailer with a reserve of $90,000. To make a really long story short, well, let me give you a little bit of background. On Bring a Trailer and P-Car Market, if the high bid is within 5% of the reserve, then the auction house will mark it as sold, and then they will pay the seller the difference out of their buyer fee, because they would rather take a skinny or take a zero and show the car is sold than to have a no sale. Right. So that's right in their policies. It's common practice. If you sign up as a buyer or seller, like, you know this. So we had a reserve of 90 grand and we're watching the auction. We had met with the seller. The G63 was on consignment, so we're selling it for somebody else. And we had met with them earlier in the day. They wanted to lower the reserve to 85. I said, okay. Then they decided not to. We were back and forth on this. So I said, no, just let the auction play out. Let's see how it goes. Well, sitting at 80 grand right until the final moments, which is typically when everyone bids, 81, 81.5, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86. Now I'm looking at it going, okay, 86. 86 times 1.05 is 90,300. So it's going to sell. We're good. Like, Bring a Trailer will cut us back a check for the difference. 86 sits at 86, counts down, it sells. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, not the result we wanted, but it doesn't matter. We still get 90 grand, which was our reserve. So I text the seller and said, hey, man, congrats. It sold. Like, don't worry, because if you see it sold at 86, like, you're still getting 90 because Bring a Trailer will make up the difference. We get the email. I then go check the email from Bring a Trailer. Congratulations, your item auction is sold. The buyer name is, and I looked at, I couldn't believe my eyes.
It's the same dude.
It was the same dude.
Oh.
The guy consigning the car. And I texted him. I'm like, what the frick? He won his own freaking car. I'm like, how do you not know this? And he's like, what happened, man? Like, how did I don't get it. Like, what? Why they charge my card? I'm like, bro, they make up the difference. You more like it's in the bidder contract. I'm like, he's like, so are you gonna, like, what do we do now? Can you just sell it to the underbidder? I'm like, I don't know who it was. He goes, well, yeah, me and another dealer friend of mine were bidding it up. I'm like, so the underbidder is your guy too? I'm like, come on, man. Like, you're gonna get me banned from Bring a Trailer. They're gonna think I'm in on this.
Oh God.
And I'm like screenshotting all the texts for the inevitable, you know, deposition, right? To use a Toby Flenderson quote. I'm like, come on, man. Are you kidding me? So, yeah. So then he asked me, he's like, so they charged my card $4,300. He's like, are you going to take care of that with Bring a Trailer? Like, are you going to figure it out? I'm like, no, I'm on their side. It's me and Bring a Trailer against you, man.
Oh, God.
So he paid $4,300 to not sell his car on Bring a Trailer.
Oh,
and it's still for sale. Oh, it's too good.
But after a time, I decided I want to become a police officer. So
Why in the world would you want to do that?
I can't tell you why. I wish I had a really good story like T.J. Hooker inspired me or one of those great cop shows. I loved Columbo. But really, it just seemed like something I wanted to do, and I did. So I was able to get a job. But back then, in the late 80s, when I became a cop, you literally vied for positions with 200 other people for one job. It was crazy. So it was very difficult. So you had to become a part-time cop, learn the trade as a reserve officer in Maine, and then hopefully get a full-time job, which it worked out for me. And I stayed at Hamden PD for almost 10 years, and then I went to Bangor PD in 1997. And
worked my way through the ranks, became a detective, an investigator, polygraph examiner, and had some great cases, did a lot of homicides, child abuse, polygraph examinations. And, you know, one thing a cop does a lot is write. So I suppose yeah. that I honed my skills by writing reports. And I used to like to add a little pizzazz to the reports, and sometimes they'd get sent back, and that's too much pizzazz. So I just kind of tempered it and had a good time with it. But I always enjoyed writing a good line, even though, you know, related to the crime. But I'd like to, yeah, you know, I wrote them kind of humorous. If there was something humorous, I made sure I quoted people a lot. And a lot of cops in those days weren't quoting people. But I was like, hey, put quotes. If they say that, I'm putting it in the report. So
and who knows what meth heads will say, right?
Absolutely. People say some great things and they need to be quoted. So I did that a lot. And it kind of made it fun, I think, for juries. And had a really good conviction rate and a good confession rate because I could speak to people and treat them fairly and kindly, and they'd tell me they killed people. And that's really, you know, if they'd admitted they killed people, I win. So that's where I came to be. And over the time, finally, I decided it was probably time to become a CO or a commanding officer, just because I was getting older and it seemed like maybe I should try that sergeant thing. So I went for sergeant. I was able to get it. And the only position open was PIO, public information officer. And so I took that job, and Facebook came with PIO. So they said, you can update the Facebook page. I said, I don't even have a Facebook page. That was in 14. So I took over the Facebook page, and I could see that it was absolutely boring to read. And I said, let's make this fun. And I'm going to write some things. And the chief said to me, no religion, no politics. Have fun with it and don't get me sued. So,
isn't that kind of your job every time you get into a patrol car?
Yeah, don't get us sued. And I know some cops can't handle that, but I was able to get through it without. I've had a few lawsuits and most were, you know, summary judgments and thrown out. So thankfully for that. But that's how I became a writer for the Facebook page. Insane.
That's pretty good.
Well, it was. There's a lot of things in between. Of course, we don't have a lot of time. Yeah, I'm sure, yeah. But you know, over time, I just sort of ended up. I always said to guys that were young cops, female or otherwise, I'd say, pick a rock, cross the stream this way. Don't feel like you got to jump all the way across. Look for a dry rock, jump on it, and stay there for a while. Try something, then go somewhere else till you get across the stream to where you want to be. I think a lot of people come in now. Officers come in. And they're like, I want to be a detective. Well, that takes, you know, you're going to be on the road 10 years. Television has destroyed any hope of common sense in society. So they're like, well, you're a CSI. Well, you, no, you're not. You're a patrol officer. You're doing patrol officer function until you learn the trade and learn how to talk to people. So it takes some time to get there. Mm-hmm. And I did my time in the hole and crawled out of it. And here I am at your place. So that's it.
Glamorous.
Know? Yeah, no,
come so far.
I'd like to tell you it was, but it wasn't. And
I was referring to the being at our place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is great.
The height of success right sure. here. Wow. You said something that I found interesting. You said that back in the 80s there's 200 guys vying for one job.
Yes.
And that is seems to be, at least in the departments in Ohio, the exact opposite
yeah.
right now to where our local department will hire guys who haven't even been through police academy.
Sure.
They'll just say, you're hired, and we'll send you. We'll sort out the right. training later. They're yes. so desperate for...
It's desperate everywhere, and even in Maine, whereas we used to have... Well, the test I took to get to Bangor PD, there were two nights of testing for three jobs, and there were 200 to 250 each night at a local junior high to take the test to become a cop. Now, we don't have a test because we look at education and their background and things like that, but we bring them in for an oral board first. We talked, if we could get two or three in each process, meaning two or three to put in, and we could get one out of every two processes, we'd be on our way to some success, but that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Because the background, it seems to me that a lot of people do a lot of things when they're younger that we didn't do when we were younger because we had some fear of our father or the cops, local cops, right? But it seems like they try a lot of different things, whatever it may be. And then they realize, hey, I guess you're right. I shouldn't have done that. So that washes out a lot of people.
Sure.
Not to say that some dabbling in things is a problem because we don't expect perfection, But we certainly don't hire saints or angels either, because I'm not one. But some people carried it a bit too far.
Sure.
And they're like two hours into it, like, you know, I think I'd like to be a cop now. I'm going to stop selling cocaine and I'll apply for a job. And that doesn't work that way.
Right.
And it's difficult to really get somebody in there. So it's just difficult to find candidates that really are serious about getting into it. And I don't blame them now. This is a different time, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would jump into law enforcement if I was in this era, you know, in a young person. I don't think I probably would. But, you know, here I am finishing up, so it's okay.
Do you think cannonballing notoriety would prohibit somebody from being a cop?
I think that you would probably do really well in the EVOC course, you know, where, you know, the emergency vehicle operation course. You'd do fine. We'd take you. As a matter of fact, I'll drive you back there right now. We'll get you in a uniform by tomorrow.
Can I just do the driver training and skip the rest of it?
You know what? If that's, you know, at some point we'll probably take you just for that, just to be a driver. I don't think it would be a real big problem. You'd probably have some things to answer to about, you know, certain questions you may have to answer honestly. How fast were you going on the trip? Or, you know, did you break any laws on the way? And I suppose if you're honest, you'd have to say yes to both. And
I wasn't charged with anything.
You were never caught for anything.
Right.
So you can't be charged if you're not caught. So, no, I don't think that would be a big problem. That's not, I mean, that's pretty mild stuff now, you know, driving fast across the country. Most of us would be just jealous of you being able to do it.
Last week we read a crazy attempt at negotiations from a prince. Greetings and salutations, my brother in Christ. I trust all is well with you and your family. I write to you in search of a modest yet spectacular in search of a modest yet spectacular vessel fit for me to minister and conduct the wonderful works of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Why, sir, a Ferrari would be a fine vehicle for that scam.
Somebody offered me $60,000 for a $115,000 car and said that they needed it to be their God had told them that it was their chariot of choice to, you know, to proclaim the works of their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Ministry mobile.
So we found Arnab once again, found this guy's website. He is a writer, a motivational speaker, a model, it looks like, and an Olympic hopeful. He's a worldwide best-selling author, and you can find his books on Amazon. The Mabry Destined Effect, Volume 2, has one rating on Amazon of 1 star.
Is we kind of got to buy these, don't we?
Claim to be best-selling.
You can buy it brand new for $100, or there are 5 used from $4.75. Oh,
I think we've made enough in Super Chats to make this happen, boys. We've got to start a book club.
Oh, no.
No, we can't do that to brother. What was his name? Brother Thomas? Or
No. He was referring to our guy as Brother Thomas. This is Mabry Destined. Oh, man.
Oh,
that's worse resale value than a Mercedes AMG from the 90s.
That's depreciation. Oh,
it's free on Kindle.
Free on Kindle, you say?
I do say.
But there's more. The Mabry Destined Effect Volume 3 has 3 ratings, and he's up to 2.8 stars.
Hey.
This is great. From the review from a gullible tourist, not everything that shines is gold. I had hoped for an inspiring read. I forced myself to read amateur writing and inconsistent weird stories about the author's time in university. A bit vulgar. Not recommended. But the 5-star was, I read this book and I have become so enlightened I'm floating. I can't touch the ground. Please send help. The ceiling fan is drawing me ever nearer.
Oh, we need a book club, guys. I want to read these.
Oh, that's a great review.
Guys, viewers here, you can go on Amazon, The Mabry Destined Effect. This is the guy that
is there a volume 1?
I hope not. That would be so freaking just started funny. With two. That would be so great. Everyone's perpetually looking for volume one. Can't find it nowhere.
Oh, man. So this guy is not going to be buying my Ferrari to proclaim the gospel of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Even like, but, does he even say he's like a pastor or ordained or anything? Like, that's not a part of his
bio.
Brand?
Let's see. He's a Ghanaian prince, singer, dancer, songwriter, top model, 2X best-selling author, actor, and Olympic hopeful. He's also a humanitarian, the founder of the Mabry Destin Foundation, and the author of the inspirational book series, The Mabry Destin Effect, The Journey to the Kingdom of Heaven.
Mm. Guys, okay. Guys, right. There's an Instagram.
Oh, here we go.
Ethan, you better put that link in the episode description.
Yeah. The Mabry
Destin. So Arnab found him. I can't find the link, but Arnab found somewhere that he was asking for sponsorship. And when you go on the sponsorship page, there's like options for amounts. The default amount when you land on the sponsorship page, anyone want to guess it?
$100.
That was probably
$100,000. The minimum amount is $1,000. The maximum default is $999,999.
He apparently sold over $250,000 in books at some point.
No.
To his mom.
And he's posted some Boxsters that I think he might have
owned.
Is
it a yellow Boxster?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the one that he bought from Portia Beechwood. Yes, so that's like how we came across this guy originally. He had inquired on that. His offer was quite a bit more reasonable than half price that he offered on the Ferrari. But
he put a black plate with yellow lettering that said Prince Mabry on it on the front. It's amazing. That's and hashtagged manifest through Jesus Christ as he's sitting in it with his shirt off. This is a vibe.
What's the Instagram handle?
He's going to get like...
It's just Mabry Destin.
Mabry Destin.
All right, everybody head over to @MabryDestin. Don't troll him. Don't troll him. Just follow him. Give him a boost. Give him a boost.
He says 2-time best-selling author. Where is volume one?
We'll never know.
No, volume two and volume three are the best-selling ones.
Volume one has to exist.
It's a great marketing tactic, though.
It's brilliant.
Sink people into
it's when you start a business, your first invoice is like $2,342.
Exactly. Yeah. Start strong. Make them know that you've done this before. This ain't your first rodeo. It's your second, turns out, for this guy.
Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose: to make people part of the experience. If you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, your wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy, flexible live streaming platform for organizations and individuals. Boxcast is so easy, we're broadcasting this from a phone. Head over to switchcars.com/boxcast for your free trial. Again, it's switchcars.com/boxcast for your free trial. Yes, August 12th at the Valley View Recreation Club, the annual nude car show. That's right, this is a thing. The Valley View Recreation Club is a small rustic nudist club. I don't know what a rustic nudist is, but... and it is not clothing optional, so it's mandatory.
Oh.
Yeah, right. It's comfortably conceived, odd choice of words, and designed for people who desire an escape from the pressures and pretensions of everyday life. I mean, clothes are not that high pressure.
Like, this isn't Valley View, Ohio, is it?
No, this is up in Wisconsin.
That'd be fantastic.
Ethan wants to go. That's what he's saying right now.
Oh my
gosh. In your backyard.
But I feel like, you know, it's like a nude beach, right? Which I've never been to, but people that tell me, right, like, everybody thinks like, oh, it's a bunch of like beautiful women. You go there and just, you know, but this is like, it's a car show. this isn't going to be a nude car show. It's going to be a dude car show.
There's like, going to be a bunch of guys like Ethan driving their cross cabs nude into this car show. Tops down.
Well, but like, how do you get there? You got to go nude. Like, Aaron doesn't even like wearing shorts and leather seats. What about those old muscle cars with black vinyl?
Mm.
I mean, talk
we're
about
gonna get
like
some fried
ball burn. Yeah.
Ball burn.
Yeah, singe the hairs down there.
Some chestnuts roasting over the black interior.
It's good. Well, not chestnuts. I mean, if you, Tyler, if you took your 996 there, you know, if they mentioned fried eggs, they wouldn't be talking about your headlights.
Ew.
I mean, oh, the butt sweats, man. Does Nathan's detailing make a product to like decontaminate the seats from that? Yeah, or
That'd be great if
this is a burgeon, a market you could enter.
Yeah, I don't know if we've tapped into the
what
swamp,
if you have indigestion,
swampy nature. Of, is that too much? There goes the monetization.
Oh man, all the heat. I mean, you burn your ass. Like, you're gonna get out and your cheeks are gonna look like pieces of toast. Like the lines on the seat will be grill marks,
flame broiled.
Hey baby, I'm a butter your bread is gonna be a new pickup line. Like, oh, this I had to be very careful when I was searching for information on this to like not search for information on this, because I'm like, I don't want to see.
I mean, who cares if you do it on your work computer? You own the business. Who's going to come after you?
I don't want to see these things. I don't want to see the Corvette curmudgeon without his Corvette hat and shirt and shorts. And
only his Corvette hat.
That's only it. His Corvette hat and New Balance. Yeah. Golly.
What is the real point of Cannonball?
Well, for me, it's I like the outlaw nature of it, and I have a problem with authority. So it's kind of, yes, exactly. So it's kind of a protest against government overreach and telling me what I can and can't do, and also to prove that the speed limits are ridiculous. Speed limits these days, I've said it before, I said it the last time we were here. I mean, speed limit right now on most interstates is the same that it was 50 years ago. You know, people are driving around in 55 Chevys, with no seatbelts on a bench seat, going 70 miles an hour. Like, you're telling me that we haven't come, a little farther with car technology in the past 60, sure. 70 years? I mean, you could drive any car, I think, made today at 100 miles an hour safely.
Yeah, at least in relative safety to that comparison.
I mean, have you tried to drive the speed limit? I mean, it's terrible.
No, I haven't.
It's like impossible. Like, how do you drive the speed limit? Like, it's mind-numbing. Like, I daydream, I'll fall asleep.
Yeah. I don't joke. I have a mild case of narcolepsy, and so I will that is the thing, falling asleep, right?
I think
it's
so.
Not the stealing things. I don't, anyway.
No, that's a kleptomaniac.
Thank you. So I can't drive the speed limit because I'll fall asleep. So if I'm driving faster and actually like paying attention, going, okay, I have to watch out for this, watch out for that, and pay attention, it'll help keep me awake. But I don't know. I've never tried that excuse with a cop, but it is legitimately true. But so like I feel like there's three eras of Cannonball. One was the first 30 years of Cannonball, where they were basically proving the legitimacy of the automobile and whether or not it could make it across country, and proving the need for interstate highways. And then you had the protest against the 55 mile an hour speed limit and government overreach in the 70s when Brock Yates did the Cannonball run. But I think I've danced around this to find out like what my real point of Cannonball is. And, my protest is not necessarily against speed limits, because I agree with speed limits for the average person because they suck at driving. But it's against the entire notion that slow is safe. And that's just not true. Like, slow isn't safe. Skilled driving is safe. and skilled has, you know, wide open, like it's an open ceiling, right? Because driving is a skill that is perishable, and it's one that you're always learning. I am not to the level of skill that I want to be. I'm continually improving. But in general, focused, purposeful drivers with proper training are safe at nearly any speed, and far, far safer than the average person who's just out there driving, thinking that they're okay because they've never encountered a situation that has tested their skills. And I think only after people have all that proper training is speeding actually safe, right? Like the notion that speed kills is true, because if you add speed to a lack of training and a lack of awareness, then it's going to be a recipe for disaster. But if you put proper training into the populace like Europe has, and especially Germany, and then once people are trained, allow them to speed, I think that's the ultimate solution, is you have responsible, trained, attentive drivers that don't have restrictions on them. And I think that's like what I'm about in terms of Cannonball. Eduardo asked you, he said, tell the old man to talk about GTO number 3589.
Oh boy, that, you know, Eduardo, that is a story that warms my heart, and it probably is one of those ones where I'm going to have to do the real short story. But there was a guy that had a company called Motorcars Masculine up in North Royalton, Ohio. And when I was a kid, I saw an ad in the Plain Dealer, the Cleveland newspaper, that said you could rent a Ferrari 275 GTB, a 250 GTO, a 300 SL Gullwing, a De Tomaso Mangusta, Maserati 3500 GT, and a host of other cars for like anywhere from $13 to $30 a day. And this was Motorcars Masculine.
I hate the world that I live in.
So the thing is, this dude bought all these cars because he loved them. And he lived kind of like on a farm, and he had a big barn and everything, and he stored all these cars in the barn. But he left the GTO out on a trailer. I mean, literally for probably 20 or 30 years. And this car had been driven by Innes Ireland, and it was at the Bahama Speed Weeks. I mean, the car is a very famous car. It didn't win Le Mans or anything like that, but it was raced extensively and very successful, and raced by some really great period drivers. And the dude left the car out on the trailer. So we were doing a road rally with a bunch of friends, and we had lunch up by a national park in Cleveland, up near where there was, and I, where they were, and I had my 275 GTS, and my wife and I and our friend John. I said, well, shit, we're right by Joe Cortan's place. Why don't we go check out the GTO? Well, we had heard all the stories. The dude comes to the door with a shotgun and was like just, he scared the shit out of everybody because he didn't want anyone to come around. Well, the long story short is, I said, well, the hell with it. And so we're driving up. My wife's sitting there on the center console, and Uncle John's bent over because he thinks that he's going to be aiming for him or something like that. I go, John, you're such a wuss. Anyways, I get out of the car. I go up to the door and knock on the door. I said, may I speak to Mr. Cortan? And so when he came to the door, he said, yeah, what do you want? I said, Mr. Cortan, my name's David Nelson. I'm just really curious about one thing. And he goes, oh, you want to talk about the GTO? I go, no. I said, aren't you the guy that started Motorcars Masculine about 20 years ago? And he goes, or 10 years ago? He goes, yeah. And all of a sudden, he got a big smile on his face. And all of a sudden, we were good friends. And I said, listen, I hate to bother you on a Sunday or Saturday, whatever it was. He goes, well, listen, you can come see me anytime. Here's my phone number. You call me and we'll get together. We spent the next 2 years getting together. And, you know, and admittedly, I was trying to buy the car. And at the very end of the day, to make a real long story short, we're sitting at Chi-Chi's at Rockside Drive, and he'd call me, and I had a son that was 4 years old and one that was just born. He was a year old. And I'm sitting up there with Joe, and he goes, and we're in the booth in the back in the corner in the dark and the whole bit, and he goes, David, do you think I'm crazy? And I said, Joe, no, I don't think you're crazy, but I'll tell you what, the rest of the world does. Why the hell would you leave that GTO sitting on a trailer for 20 years? And the only reason I can say this now on this podcast, Doug, is because my dear friend Joe Cortan died about 5 or 6 years ago. But the short story is this. Joe said to me, David, everyone thinks I'm crazy because of that damn car. And he said, and I'll tell you what, there was a snowstorm about 15 years ago, and my little son went out of the house and he went to look at the cars in the barn, and he fell in the window well that was full of snow and broke his neck, suffocated, and died. And he said, I have never, ever been able to forgive myself, because if I didn't have these damn cars, my son would still be alive. And I say this with a very humble heart because it's absolutely true. And I said, well, Joe, listen, what did your son think? And he goes, he always wanted to go to Notre Dame. And I said, well, Joe, tell you what, let's work out a deal. You sell the car. We'll give an annuity to Notre Dame. You make a memorial for your son. And to this day, that's there. Fast forward 6 or 8 years, I'm at the car show at Stan Hewitt with the old 212. This kid comes up to me, throws his arms around me, and I'm like, what the heck's going on here? And he looks at me and he goes, David, you don't remember me, do you? And I go, no. And he goes, I'm Joe Cortan's son. He said, I just wanted to thank you for helping my dad. He got rid of his demons because he blamed himself for my little brother's death. And him and his wife, my mom, have been traveling the world ever since then, and he got his life back thanks to you. And you know what? All of a sudden, as far as I was concerned, that meant a hell of a lot more to me than a GTO or all the money in the world. And that's the short story. Sad but true.
I don't know how to transition from that.
Well, and so look, I'm sorry, but this all transpired over 2.5 years. So I did it in 10 minutes or whatever, you know, but it was very touching for me as well. And it still is today.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, God bless Joe and God bless his son.
Yeah. Cheers to that.